Hello, this is Bill Curley.
And Holly Hudley.
And welcome to the podcast In Between, which is an educational offering of
St. Paul's United Methodist Church and Ordinary Life.
So we were just talking, Holly, about what a heretic you are.
I suppose I am a bit of a heretic.
Well, we weren't really talking about
that. But that was a bit of a projection.
Well, we were talking about what I was going to say in my sermon on Sunday, but really I wanted this podcast to be about what you're going to teach about.
Well, I am going to talk about a plant that I have that has taught me a great deal about what it means to heal from the inside out. And this plant is in my succulent garden. Have you guys ever grown succulents?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe Sherry has. I've got a whole kind of built-in bed of succulents. And every time it freezes, I inevitably lose some. And I have to replace them and, you know, whatever. And so over time, everything has been replaced at some point. But we've had these two freezes the last 2 years. Pretty significant. Deep freezes. And I have this one kind of innocuous succulent. It's not very attractive, but it froze the first year, so in 2023, and it kind of mushed in on itself, and it looked like it was going to die. I never really pulled it out of the ground. The summer was brutal for so many plants, but this plant didn't ever fully go away. Instead, it started to like grow this other part of itself out from the inside. And I didn't notice that this plant was transforming until after this freeze in 2024. And I was again going back and replacing some of these succulents. And I noticed that this plant had an entirely new self growing up out of it.
And same kind of plant?
Same. It was literally like a shell. And then a new plant growing up through the center of the shell.
But the same succulent plant.
Yeah.
Same.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I thought, this is such a good story. Because it's about healing and healing from the inside. Mm-hmm. And it's just, I don't know, that plant is a bit of a teacher for me. And it did freeze again in this last freeze. And so the top of the second part of the plant is kind of mushy and caved in. And I'm just anticipating that yet another part of it will grow up out of the inside. So that's the premise here is how do we heal from the inside out? And I'm going to talk a little bit about something. I know it's going to annoy you, Bill, but cultivating a daily spiritual practice.
Well, that's a novel idea.
You know Bonaventure, who wrote, he was alive in the 15th century.
Mm-hmm.
So he has this whole, it wasn't his idea. It's been an idea since the beginning of ideas, but he wrote out the threefold way in mm-hmm. Christian mysticism. So I'm going to talk about that as mm-hmm. a kind of mm-hmm. path toward union.
I am reading a new to me book by John Caputo, which I think I'll end up recommending quite highly to people. I read a book of his about hope some time ago and I liked it. And one of the books that I read recently referenced this book by Caputo, who was raised in a very strict Irish Catholic neighborhood in somewhere, I think, in Pennsylvania, major city, maybe Philadelphia, someplace like that, but very, very, very Catholic. He left high school and entered an order. And now he's written this book of really quite radical theology. And called What to Believe. I think that's the title of it.
Okay. I just pulled him up, and that is indeed a title of a book that he has written, What to Believe.
It's, and what's the publication date of that book? Can you tell me that?
2023. So pretty recent.
So it's relatively new. And he talks about how his favorite Christian mystic is Meister Eckhart. And he says that Meister Eckhart has this prayer that you have quoted a lot. I mean, you've referenced it a lot in the teaching that we have done together, that he prays to God to rid me of God. And he says the God that Meister Eckhart addresses that prayer to is the God that is, the God that is both beyond and within.
Yeah.
And the God that does not exist yet is. And he just goes on with these kind of paradoxical things. So
yeah.
healing within is something I think that would be right up Caputo's alley.
Yeah. I just think like all of these religious stories, these religious icons, figures, saints, mystics, biblical figures, Bhagavad Gita, Buddha, all of them are avatars for our own process. Job, right? How do we shed the stuff of the tribe so that we can discover the self and then live a more authentic life? And therefore gain, I think, a wider tribe. Like the whole cosmos becomes our tribe, right? This sort of sense of oneness. But I don't know, you know, when someone asked me today, you know, I grew up Catholic and I don't really want to return to that, but I really like the stories, but I don't really want my kids to have to inherit Catholicism and then kind of pull it apart because of shame and guilt. I don't really know where to land, is what he said. And we were talking about the path of mysticism and whether or not that was ever something he had explored. And it's really interesting, like how, and he said, he's like, I have this superstition that won't let me go. The kind of Pascal's wager, might as well believe in God because it would suck to be in hell for the rest of eternity, you know? Mm-hmm. And it's the might as well God, right?
Mm-hmm.
And, but what does it really mean, as Jung says, to know this God, to know oneself? To me, it's one and the same.
Mm-hmm.
And hard. I mean, what did the Christian scripture say? This is like entering through the eye of a needle.
Mm-hmm.
It requires work and practice and diligence and attention and intention, cultivating an attitude of love and compassion.
And I'm thinking that the major heresy of Christianity maybe since the Council of Trent, certainly since the Reformation, for both Protestants and Catholics, has been to create theologies that are closed and transactional,
mm-hmm.
instead of theologies that are open and relational.
Yes, yeah. And there's a whole move now toward open and relational theology.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And also this phenomenological or experiential aspect of theology, mm-hmm. that has gotten so lost because of our disassociation with the body, mm-hmm. and this sort of sensual self. I don't mean sexual self. I just mean the life of the senses.
Right.
You know?
So that is, by the way, the title that I'm using for my sermon Sunday is Open and Relational, because it is what's happening in theology
mm-hmm.
today. Mm-hmm. Is that there's this emphasis on open systems
mm-hmm.
in everywhere, and not just theology, but open systems everywhere, and also the recognition that everything is related, and that's getting applied to theology. I think it's wonderful. I think it's a great idea. It also scares people who are in need of certainty
mm-hmm.
and who are afraid.
Yeah.
Well, those things are kind of connected, I know, but because open and relational theology is not certain.
Yeah. Yeah. And people are unpredictable.
Yeah. Well, some of you are.
Some of you are. Some of you are. Yes, yes, yes. It's so nice to have at least one stabilizing force in my life. Ah, thank God. Oh my goodness.
I don't know if it's posted yet or not, but the conversation I had with Melinda Owens, we had a meeting today, and I had several opportunities in an hour-long meeting to say, in response to something Melinda would say, we're talking about something about a program we're trying to get going here at St. Paul's, and I would make a comment, and Melinda would say, you're right about that. And I would say, Melinda, I'm right about everything. And she just,
did she punch your arm?
She goes crazy about that. No, she wants to punch me in the face. But she won't.
She respects her elders too much.
she said at the meeting came to an end, she said, you know, someday, Bill, I think you will come to the realization that you're not.
Someday.
Someday.
Maybe you'll grow that humility arm of yourself. I like how Melinda says wrestle.
Yeah, what?
How she says wrestle.
Well, she's from Louisiana.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. So when you talk about healing from the inside out, do you mm-hmm. have some practical guidance to give to people who feel they are in the need of such healing? I mean, people are hurting, so how do we do this healing?
I think that's time for our podcast to end. No, I'm kidding. you know, I do think that one of the most simple and yet over time powerful ways of beginning to heal from the inside out is doing something as simple as like a body scan. Just kind of, which begins by observing each individual part of your body, noticing the sensations, noticing what you're holding, noticing what feels tight or what feels limiting or what feels open and relieving. And these kinds of ways of cultivating attention inward help our outward gaze, right? When mm-hmm. we can start to kind of, wow, that was really cool. I just released a bunch of balloons.
How'd you do that?
I don't know. I went like this, and I have learned that that does something to Zoom. It tells the balloons to go off. Just keep trying it. I'm holding up two fingers, folks, and somehow it signals to Zoom that I want balloons to be released in the background. So this idea of cultivating this inward gaze, which is, it's a mindfulness practice, shifts our attention, helps us notice our attitude toward the self. And the attitude toward the self, I think I've heard you say this many times, very much reflects our attitude towards everything.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think one of the hardest things to let go of, and I don't even know if the point is to let go of it, but is self-criticism, self-judgment.
Mm-hmm.
And this kind of, even as our attention drifts in the practice of mindfulness, dang it, yeah, I did it again. You know, so some of it is like, noticing that tension between becoming an inner observer and how quickly we go to judgments, how quickly we go to thoughts, how quickly we go to kind of like making an assertion about something.
Mm-hmm.
So then the next piece is like trying to notice our judgments. and allowing, if I could say that it was this simple, I would say it was this simple. It's lengthening the pause between what we notice and how we respond to what we notice. Mm-hmm. And if we could do that one thing.
To do so without judgment.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Where so simple and so hard. Yeah.
That is my definition of what is the essence of spiritual practice is to try to be with what is and to do so without judgment.
Yeah.
So people will get into a meditation practice, for example, and do exactly what you just said. They'll start it and then they'll say, oh crap, I'm not any good at this. And then it's negative judgment. And we end up talking about what we're doing and who it is that we think it is that doing what we're doing in such harsh ways.
Mm-hmm.
Ways that we would not talk to somebody that we really liked.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It just gets at the core problem.
Yeah. It really does. And it's tough to shift. I had a friend help imagine the other day, kind of, what would you say to that self or that person that you are speaking so harshly to if it was a 5-year-old child?
Mm-hmm.
And can we learn to speak to ourselves in that way?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you know, I'll be the first to own I've messed up with my 5-year-old children. You know, there are times when our frustration is right at the surface and it spills over. But in a moment of awareness, no one in their right minds would speak to a 5-year-old child the way that we speak to ourselves sometimes.
Mm-hmm. All right.
We wouldn't reprimand a 5-year-old for not knowing how to tie their shoe.
Or do physics.
Yeah. We just say, oh, okay, mm-hmm. baby, it's okay. You know,
mm-hmm.
let me teach you how.
Right.
And cultivating that gentleness, I think, towards the self is, that's the secret. But you know, I don't know. I also don't want to like paint the picture that I think mindfulness erases or gets rid of what we might call negative loops, right? I think that mindfulness just shifts our attention about them. You know, once I think you said this maybe 2 weeks ago, like the once we can begin to notice our thoughts, we've changed something.
Mm-hmm.
Just that shift can be a really powerful thing. So, you know, so on top of that, I don't care at all what sort of belief patterns, religious stories, spiritual practices you put on top of that. Because once you can cultivate awareness, I think you can begin to observe everything in this way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't think it belongs to a specific tradition, but it works with all traditions.
Mm-hmm. I agree. I think that what I'm thinking about in using the phrase open and relational can be applied to any religious system. And then if you want to add to that open and relational, the fundamental aspects of it are being present and paying attention, to go deep instead of right or left, right?
Mm-hmm.
Then you can add that dimension that is specific to the religious tradition that you want to follow, as long as you acknowledge that that's a religious tradition that you choose to follow as one among many options.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And yeah. I did not just say all religions are the same, because they're not.
Nope.
But that's part of digging the well 60 feet deep.
Yeah, exactly. I wonder what you think about whether or not, I want to echo that you said not all religions are the same. they're not. They have different practices, ethos, you know, just belief systems, stories. And the more I read the mystics, the more they sound, and I'm using air quotes, the same. Because it's somehow deeper than doctrine. It's somehow deeper than religious belief. And yet there is certainly specific language in Hafiz's poetry, for example, that is very Sufi, that is very much rooted in Islam, right? Mm-hmm. There's language in St. Francis's poetry that is rooted in his tradition. But the mystics begin to sound so similar to me, so alike.
Well, they didn't. I think one of the things to keep in mind is that the the scripture that St. Francis had was mm-hmm. not the Bible.
Right.
It was nature.
Yes, true.
And so many of the mystics that we revere now did not have the theological structure that was made available because of the printing press and a wide circulation of correct doctrine.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So they were restricted by a lot of that.
Yeah.
And I think that's one of the reasons too, that they were free to talk about their visions, like say Julian of Norwich was, because mm-hmm. she didn't reference the Bible.
Yeah.
She referenced her own personal experience. And
yes.
Some people thought she was crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. I think a lot of the mystics people think are crazy. So here we are.
Well, yeah. when you think about it, that I said add Jesus to that. If you think about what we know about Jesus, we didn't teach doctrine.
Mm-mm. But we've turned it into it. We've turned it into doctrine, right. You know?
He told stories about mm-hmm. people who lost coins and children who strayed away and came back and people right. who owned vineyards. He didn't say anything about you have to believe this.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
I'm always right.
Yeah, I forgot. I can't even believe I tried to insinuate that you would be anything other than right.
Right, thank you.
You're welcome. Dr. Bill Curley, everyone. Mr. Wright.
Yeah. You know what my wife said about that years ago when I claimed that? She said, you know your problem is you really believe that.
I mean, some part of us believe that we are. Yeah, that's right. You I'm sure some
you
part
really
of you is
that.
Very satisfied in your smugness. How nice to be you.
But that's the way she deflated that.
Yeah. That's really funny. That's really funny. Oh, yeah.
So what is the name of this succulent plant? Is it the aloe vera plant?
No, it's called a blue myrtle.
I don't know that one.
Yeah, it's a lovely little like bulbous succulent plant. It is a single body, unlike many succulents that are like fractals, where they grow mm-hmm. in sort of mm-hmm. almost spiral shapes and mm-hmm. repeating forms. But this one is a single form. Yeah. It's underwhelming entirely.
Mm-hmm.
Like this plant is so ordinary. It's not one you would even take a second look at in a garden full of succulents. It would be the one you wouldn't notice because it's unremarkable. And yet it is entirely miraculous what that plant has been through mm-hmm. and how it is thriving now.
I'm looking forward to what you're going to say about it on Sunday.
Yeah, me too.
Oh, you're not through writing.
I'm not through writing yet. But I've got my outline done and all of that. So it's just got to fill in the gaps. I'm curious where you have this. You have an archive of stories in your mind.
Mm-hmm.
Like you can just flip through and be like, what's the story I know about this one? I don't have that
about
archive
what?
Of anything. You could say, I'm going to talk about the meaning of life today as it pertains to magic tricks. And then you would have a story about it. And I'm just so curious how you've archived all these stories in your life. You have Buddhist stories sometimes. You have a rabbi walked into a bar story sometime. But where do you log all these stories? Are these just ones you've collected over time?
Well, I think it's part of my Asperger's.
Okay.
Actually,
uh-huh.
I brag about the fact that I have never forgotten a joke I've ever heard.
Can you retell my goat joke?
It might take me a while to get it, but I could get it back.
It's my only joke. I can't tell it here.
Well, I think that's why I was blocking on it right now. All right. So, they're just there. I mean, you've seen the show Monk.
Yes. Yeah.
You know, the monk has got this ability to walk into a room and see how everything should be and which not. He says, aha, there's a clue to the murderer and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
And somebody will say something remarkable about it. He will say, it's a blessing, it's a curse.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Because I just have never forgotten the stories. Now, they may be, it may take a while to retrieve them, but
but they're in there. Roll
they're
it
in
X.
There.
Yeah. Did I ever tell you that once upon a time, we met Tony Shalhoub, who plays Monk, and it was in the context of the Global AIDS Interfaith Alliance and being at mm-hmm. some event for them and a fundraiser. And there was a time when Elizabeth Taylor's foundation gave a lot of money to Gaia. They might still, but so Gaia became somehow connected to sort of some of these Hollywood types, right?
Mm-hmm.
And also there's a church in Pasadena where a lot of actors live that got engaged. So Tony Shalhoub is at a Gaia event with Josh and me, and we are across the table from him getting our buffet dinners and nodding at each other and saying, hello, how are you? And Josh is and me, elbowing me going, you know who that is, right? And I'm like, I don't know who that is because I didn't recognize him. But later, Josh was so proud of the fact that he outbid Tony Shalhoub on a auction item.
What was it?
Some weekend stay in like a beach house or something.
Nothing tangible.
No, I mean, we went there and
yeah,
to stay the weekend.
Like,
yeah.
Yeah, not something you could frame and
oh,
put on
no,
the wall.
No, not something
not
like
a
Jesus
art.
Clock. Nothing like that.
Yeah.
No. But that's his claim to fame, is that he outbid Tony Shalhoub on an item. But the other claim to fame also happened at that same party, because there were TV actors there, and one of them looked up at Josh and immediately blushed, like head to toe blush, looked down and got really busy trying to get their meal on their plate, and kind of at the end of the buffet line snuck a look up at Josh again and kind of let out this long sigh of relief and said, oh my God, I thought you were Jamie Foxx.
Oh, wow.
And
well,
I was like, Jamie Foxx is not married to a white lady. And Josh was like, just why do you have to ruin it? Why can't you just let people believe that I'm Jamie Foxx?
By the way, for people who are listening to this and have never seen Holly Hudley's husband, he is absolutely drop dead gorgeous. I mean, he is a really handsome human being.
He is.
So
I
can
concur.
See it. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So, yeah.
All of
Anyway.
that.
This is funny.
So I have a story about practice.
Okay, tell me your story about practice.
Well, I can tell you several, but I'm going to tell you the most recent one.
Okay.
And I was going to tell a really long version of it Sunday in the sermon, but it's way, way too long to tell.
Okay.
So, as you know, I love magic. I love doing magic. I buy magic. I perform magic, but it's mostly for my own entertainment.
Yeah.
Nobody wants to see magic tricks. And occasionally
Little kids love it.
Well, yeah, kids do. And adults will if you phrase it correctly.
Yes, yes.
You know, if you ask an adult, hey, was there a trick? They'll say, no. But if you open it with something like, do you believe in magic?
Yeah.
Let me show you something. You know, you can get into it that way. Anyway, today in the day of YouTube, Instagram, Facebook, and all that, you can go on YouTube and you can find the secret of how David Copperfield flew, for example. Everything's available to the public. And for many magicians, this is a big issue that should the public have secrets that have been protected, but also a source of entertainment. And it's really, really disappointing when you find out how a magic trick or effect is done, because most of them are so simple. Not all of them, but some of them are so simple. So having a professional rating as a magician, I am in the know and have that, I don't mean that arrogantly, I am in the loop of where professional magicians procure their effects. That's not open to the general public. So you have to have a rating as a pro. You have to know who to contact. And if you want to buy a magic trick or effect that you hear about, you approach the creator of that effect, tell them that you're interested, see if they're selling this effect, what you get. Money exchanges hands, generally by PayPal or something like that, and you get a link to a video with a password that is specific to you.
Okay.
So nobody else can see what you're doing, right? So I recently saw an effect created by a magician whose name is John Banyan. He's written a number of magic books, and he's a prolific card creator of a really cool card magic. And I saw this trick and I thought, boy, I would really love to know how to do that and to do it. So I bought it. $50, something like that. And I got the necessary cards to do the effect. Then I got a link to the video, and it requires a card manipulation, misdirection handling that I couldn't do. I just couldn't do it. I could follow the video and I could make it about three quarters of the way through, and then the card would just go all over the floor. So I call my friend Steve Burton, who is a professional magician here in Houston, who I think owes me, because when we moved to our new home, I gave Steve about 80% of my magic.
Okay, yeah.
A lot of magic.
And
Sherry, my beautiful bride, says, you still have too much. And I think, so doesn't everybody have 500 decks of cards? I mean. anyway.
No.
I do. Anyway, so I called Steve. I told him what I was trying to do. And he came over to our apartment, and I said, this is the move. It's called a Heyman reverse optical mist deal. Fancy word for a magician's light. And Steve took the cards in his hands, and he did the effect like somebody would take lint and flick it off their clothes. Effortlessly.
Wow.
And so he said, let me show you how to do it. This is what I think you're doing wrong. He corrected it, and I kind of got it right. He stood behind me with his I was sitting down. He took my hands and did it, and I got it. I got it. And I looked, and I got it. And I did it about 6 or 7 times before he finally had to leave. And he said to me, "I think you've got it. But what you need to do is you need to practice this move 1 hour a day for the next 3 weeks to get it down."
Yeah.
One card trick lasts 5 minutes. And then and the parting shot as he got up to leave the table, he said, "By the way, don't look at your hand."
Ah.
While
yeah.
you do it.
Yeah. Right? Yeah,
because if you do, people look where you're looking.
That's right, and you're trying to divert attention in a way. Yeah,
right. That's the misdirection. So I thought, okay. So when we want to do something like practice inner healing, it takes at least that much practice.
Oh yeah, 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 yeah. And it's interesting too, because I think people who haven't yet cultivated the daily practice, and this was me for a long part of my life, you know, probably the first half of the life I've lived so far, where it wasn't like an intentional spiritual practice. Wonder why they feel agitated all the time, and that if only I could do this right, I wouldn't feel agitated all the time. But I think what begins to happen is that the noticing is that the agitation, like I notice now when I don't do my practice because I'm agitated. I don't think I noticed before how agitated I mm-hmm. could get, spiraled into anxiety or whatever it is, mm-hmm. you know? And what has happened since cultivating something is a much quicker noticing of like, oh, there's that. And so a much quicker self-correction, course correction, on kind of redirecting my attention as it were, like in the magic trick, right? You want my attention to be over here, not on your hands, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I think that's what I notice when I don't do it, is how quickly I can get back to agitation, self-judgment, and irritation. But
so Meister Eckhart would say that lovers find time to be together.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not a burden.
Right.
And of course, he lived a long time ago and had a different way of thinking than we do. And so I think that my way of thinking about it now is that if somebody really wants, well, you're an artist, you know mm-hmm. this. If somebody mm-hmm. really wants to bring art of any kind to fruition, it's a labor of love.
Mm-hmm.
It is a labor.
Yeah. Yeah.
But you love it.
Oh yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. It's both yeah. it's both work and energizing. So yeah. yeah. Absolutely.
Well, yeah. I'm going to come and heckle you Sunday if you uh-uh. don't say spiritual practice enough.
So when I say we need to cultivate
a daily spiritual practice,
you're going to complete the sentence for me.
I can.
Okay. All right. That's your job.
That's what I'm going to ask the people in the church to do.
Okay, good. All right. Then we'll be sort of talking about the same thing.
We'll be sort of mirroring each
yeah.
other.
Right. I love that. Oh, I wonder how okay. that happened. After 30-something years, you finally got to me, huh? All right.
See ya.
All right. Talk to you soon. Bye.